Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to the second part of It's All About Food here on August 19th, 2014. And we're going to continue this theme here of talking about wonderful people who are doing wonderful things for the planet and getting to know our fellow friends, the non-human animals out there, and giving them names and treating them the way they should be treated, and we can learn a lot from that. Kim Sterla is my next guest. She's the executive director of Animal Place and co-founded the sanctuary in 1989. She has been a central figure in the animal rights movement for 30-plus years. Sterla wrote the first law in the country that protects pre-university students unwilling to participate in animal dissections. For more than a decade, she has served as director of the Peninsula Humane Society. Kim is the resident pig whisperer, able to communicate beautifully with even the wiliest of pigs. She shares her home and life with dogs Ralph, Marty, and Sally. Hi, Kim. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. It's really, really happy to talk to you. And I'm sorry that in the last quarter century I haven't had an opportunity to meet you.
Well, come on up to Animal Place and we'll give you a grand farm tour.
I know. It sounds pretty good. You co-founded that sanctuary about 25 years ago.
25 years ago, yeah. We celebrated our 25th birthday this year. And boy, have we seen the sanctuary grow from the little place that we co-founded to where it is now.
Yeah, so 1989, the world was a very different place, especially when it came to vegetarians, vegans. And
yes.
How are you so smart?
Well, you know, the other co-founder was a veterinary professor. I was involved in the Humane Society work, always was involved in a lot of issues animals used in research, you know, fighting the trapping of animals for fur, working on legislation to protect students from doing dissection, requiring spaying and neutering. But, you know, I had one of those aha moments when I started looking at the numbers. I think, gosh, look at the millions of animals we euthanize in shelters and those that are hunted and trapped and used in research and testing and et cetera, et cetera. And I added up all those animals, and that comes to about 1.5% of all animals killed in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, 98.5% are farmed animals. It's the chickens and turkeys and cows and pigs. And
yeah.
I realized I needed to kind of redirect the course I was on and focus on those that really had no advocates for them.
It's something that is invisible to most of us, those big numbers, 70 billion today, land animals that we eat for food, not including what's in the water or who's
exactly.
in the water, excuse me. And but at least the last quarter century, we've seen some good progress. It's never fast enough for those of us who are involved, but I guess when you look back at history, it's been a good quarter century.
I think it's been good for the availability of healthy
yeah.
vegan food.
Not
I don't
for
think
the animals,
seen it,
though.
No, we've really seen no improvement in the manner in which animals are raised and treated.
Yeah, actually, there's probably more now because those people who have gotten the message it's not healthy to eat red meat, they've moved over to chicken, and as a result, many more lives have been
exactly.
lost. Many more little lives, precious
exactly.
little lives. Now, I heard about Animal Place recently. You've been in the news, and I started this half of the show talking about giving animals names, and there's one who has a name, Panda. Can you tell us that story? You know, when I first read it, I didn't realize Panda was a cow.
Panda is a cow, and he has an absolutely heartbreaking story, but one, unfortunately, isn't all that unusual. He was being raised as an FFA animal, a Future Farmers of America. So I think, as probably most folks realize, kids get involved in Future Farmers of America or 4-H. They buy an animal, they raise him or her, they bond with, they take care of. There's this trust that develops between the two. But, of course, that child is raising that animal exclusively to take to the county fair to sell him or her for how much per pound they get. And Panda had the unfortunate case of being raised by this student, and he was housed at the high school down in southern central California. And then a 23-year-old man, got into the schoolyard one evening. He doused Panda with gasoline and set him on fire. Mm-hmm. And Panda was found the following morning covered in blistering mm-hmm. burns over mm-hmm. a third of his body. We know how painful burn injuries yep. are. And yep. probably the humane thing to do would have maybe to put him out of his misery. But the yep. student chose to rehabilitate him only so he could take him to the county fair mm. to sell him. Mm-hmm. And he was scheduled to be sold at the county fair last month. And his story really got a lot of attention, and people begged us. I got so many emails and phone calls asking us to please rescue him. Long story, or short story, I should say, of that is that we did get Panda. I drove down to Paso Robles, loaded him up in our stock trailer, and brought him back to Animal Place a week before he was scheduled to go to the county fair to be slaughtered.
And Panda's doing very well.
And Panda is doing very well, very well. It was really interesting to go to the home. He was at the boy's home, and the trust that this cow had in this kid, you know, for all he knew, the kid mm. was his friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the only human that he really knew and bonded with, and he trustingly let the kid lead him into our stock trailer. He could have easily have trustingly let the kid lead him into the, you know, the auction what ring the following mm-hmm. week. But it's that ultimate betrayal. You know, I always think, gosh, what's the best quality I would want to instill in children? And it would really be compassion and empathy. And here with the 4-H and FFA, we're encouraging the kids to bond with these animals. They take care of them. They nurture them. And yet only really to do the ultimate betrayal, to sell them at auction when they're, you know, 6 to 9 months of age.
I often wonder why the world is as violent as it is. And the news lately, it's always horrible, but there seems to be mm-hmm. some really horrible things going on all over.
Yes.
In other countries and in our country as well. And I keep asking myself, how do humans do these things? And one of the answers that come back to me is we all have violence in our own lives, and we teach children violence and to accept it, and then the rest happens.
Exactly. I mean, rather than to nurture this, I mean, how many kids do you see on the front page of your local paper at county fair and they're crying as their pig's going to market? Boy, you have a child that's bonding with an animal and has empathy and compassion. You want to nurture that quality.
Yeah.
You don't want to squelch it. You don't want to stamp on it, but you want it to blossom even more. So, yeah, Panda's here, and Panda now has a girlfriend, I'm happy to tell you.
Oh, that's nice.
We rescued another little 4-year-old Jersey cow who had been rescued from actually a veal crate operation, and he's quite enamored with her. So Panda and Jazzy, as their name, are good buddies, and then slowly they'll be introduced to the big cow herd we have here at the sanctuary.
These groups, Future Farmers of America and 4-H, I just sigh thinking about it, but there needs to be things that we can do about this, about raising children in this way. Back in March, I spoke to 250 cattle ranchers about climate change and animal agriculture's contribution, mm-hmm. and there were some young children at this event that had raised some animals, and they were giving them prizes, and mm-hmm. the same thing, they were going off to slaughter. And mm-hmm. yet they were being rewarded for the work that mm-hmm. they had done.
It's interesting. I've gone to the county fairs many a time, and I'll walk around the barns and I'll talk to the kids just kind of off record. Hey, what's the name of your pig? And, oh, you know, how long have you had her? And you're taking her into the ring. And then I'll just say, hey, is this kind of tough on you? And I would say half the children I've spoken to, and I've spoken to so many, they voluntarily say it was the first time.
Mm.
And that is so telling. You know, that is the desensitization process happening right there. It was the first time, but it's easier. And then they go into a justification mode of, well, you know, I'm going to be able to buy a car with this money, or it's going to help me go to school. So it's really interesting to see the pattern of the replies I get from the children when I'm talking to them about it.
Yeah, and then when we're grown up, we justify all kinds of actions.
Exactly.
That are based on experiences like that.
Exactly.
Okay, well, happy ending for Panda.
Happy ending for Panda.
Happy beginning for Panda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whisper. Now, are you really a pig whisperer?
I have to say, I think I am. I do have an affinity for pigs, and oh my goodness, I can't even begin to tell you how many over the 25 years that I've been able, had the honor of rescuing and living with, and there's something about pigs that I love.
I want to know what they told you.
Well, you know, that's that independent nature of them. They're very indulgent. They love food. They kind of have similar taste buds to humans in that, you know, offer them a head of broccoli or a nice juicy apple or cantaloupe, and they're going to go for the juicy cantaloupe or apple. Or if you want to put in a pastry, they'll take the pastry over some healthy fruit or vegetable.
Okay, always choose broccoli, but I'm not.
Well, then, I don't know what to say. they would probably choose broccoli if it was, you know, steamed and sautéed in a little margarine and garlic. They're just very engaging animals. They come up to you like dogs do, but then again, they have that aloofness that cats have. Mm. So I find them as a real combination of that. Those are two species that so many people can relate to, the cats and dogs. They've been so maligned. And I think that increases my empathy for them. They're incredibly bright. And, you know, and I can't forget that they're just so big. You just have one huge animal that you can just hug.
Now, 25 years at Animal Place, what have been some of the highlights?
Dolly, I think any time we embark on a large rescue, that is a highlight for me, and I'm grateful we've been able to do so many. I was there at Katrina and, you know, scooping up a couple of thousand birds who were just scattered all over broiler farms. We've done a lot of chickens raised in the battery cage, those that are, you know, come from the egg-laying industry.
Yep, deep.
So these are chickens. Yeah, their whole life has been just crammed in a cage. That's all they know. They've never perched. They've never felt sunlight on them. They've never dust bathed. They've never done anything, not even stretched their wings. And we have, oh, my goodness gracious, we've saved well over 10,000 of them over these past 4 years.
Mm.
So to pull them out of the cages and then transport them back to the sanctuary and take them out of the transport crates and put them on the ground and watch them literally spread their wings for the first time, little old flap, that never gets old. I mean, that just never gets old. So I think it's those moments when you're able to liberate, you know, a large number of lives, and then maybe eventually they get placed into wonderful new forever homes. So,
but, you know, these birds have been born in the factories, and how do they know what to do when they're where they're supposed to be on dirt and amongst the greenery? Yeah, many of them don't.
They don't. I mean, I think that's the real interesting thing. There is a rehabilitation process. There's a good month there with us before they're placed into homes. Surprisingly, however, there will always be that first one or two that even on the day of the rescue, they feel sunshine on them for the first time, and they actually stretch out and take a sun bath.
Mm.
And then in a few days, some of them will start taking dust baths, and the others will learn from them. It takes them a while to perch because they suffer from osteoporosis. Their muscles have atrophied, of course, because they're not even able to move. So they have to build up their strength. And it is a learning process. But to see them explore their new world, it's heartwarming. It's joyful. It's, you know, it's what this work's all about.
I'm on your website, animalplace.org, and I'm watching the little counter on the right-hand side, as how many animals have been slaughtered as long as this page has been opened. The numbers are always so mind-boggling. You know, I said 70 billion before, you say 140 billion animals. I guess you're including sea animal, marine animals in here. It just doubles the number. Ding! And it's just incomprehensible.
You know, it is. We're in the process of constructing our Museum of Animal Farming here at the sanctuary, and it's going to be an interactive museum. And we're trying to think of ways to illustrate the numbers. And so if we just look at the United States, you know, the number is about 10 billion land animals killed a year. That's just the United States. Now, most of those are chickens raised for their flesh. And it ends up being actually per second in the United States, about 264 just chickens each second. So each second. And you almost have to bring it back down to some of those small numbers because I can't fathom what 10 billion is. Nobody can.
No. 264 a second.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, those are the numbers, and that's just chickens, and that's just in the United States. So, you know, we certainly have our work cut out for us. The sanctuary isn't all we do. It can't be all we do. We have to focus so much on preventative programs. It's just essential that we educate as many people as we can.
Right. And so what do you do? What are some of those programs?
Well, you know, I think one of my favorite programs, and perhaps it's because I began my career in the animal shelter world, is our Food for Thought program, which is to invite, to ask SPCAs and humane societies to adopt a vegetarian policy for their events. So if they're going to have a fundraiser to help the dogs, it makes no sense to be frying cows on the grill.
What's the reaction to that?
We have, gosh, we started this program probably 15 years ago, and we've just kind of rejuvenated it this past year. There hasn't been a whole lot of progress, I would say, since I was working in shelters 25 years ago. Most do not have a vegan or vegetarian policy. That said, several are adopting, and we even have a cash reward of $250 should they adopt one, just as a little incentive and a thank you. And we just presented the award to, what was the name of the shelter back in New Jersey? St. Hubert's, is it? And they just adopted Tony LaRusse's shelter in Walnut Creek, California. They adopted. So, you know, it's happening. But the thing is, you know, here are all these shelters. They're in such a wonderful position for role modeling.
Absolutely.
A compassionate diet.
It's not just shelters, unfortunately. It's this human thing where we have the blinders on. I know it's frustrating at these sort of events that they're serving animals when they're trying to save and protect animals. But when I go to events like cancer research events or things about illnesses and they're serving junk food and animal products and things that we know promote the disease. You know, I don't think you'd see cigarettes or cigars offered at a lung cancer
convention. I couldn't agree more. That is the analogy I've used so much. I absolutely agree with you.
Somehow we got that one. But everything, you know, when it comes to food, we have such a long way to go.
We have such a long way to go. And it's interesting. In some ways, it seems a little overwhelming. But the beauty of this issue is it is so empowering because there is something every single person can do all day long to help.
Say that again.
Just think, if everyone gave up eating meat and animal products in just one of their dishes for that day and then slowly got on that path and increased the number of vegan meals that they were having, that would just be terrific. So it is an incredibly empowering issue. And I think part of our responsibility, those of us working on behalf of animals, is to give folks the tools. So we have a Sanctuary Sweets e-news that we send to people with delicious recipes every week. And we do vegan cooking classes. You know, we've got to show people that it's really so darn easy nowadays to switch over to a healthier and far more humane diet.
Absolutely. It is easier. So what are you feeding your animals?
Well, my dogs are vegan. They have been for, gosh, this has been decades. And the food we it's a commercially prepared bee dog, but there's several really good high quality dog brand dog food. And then I also supplement their food with the, like I make a big dish of rice and barley, and I put carrots and yams in there, and I boil it all up and then freeze it. So they get that with their dry food so that they get a lot of pretty good healthy diet.
Mm-hmm. And then the animals that you've rescued.
The animals we've rescued, well, we have our local grocery store, and has for years, donates the day-old produce to us. So the rabbits and the chickens and the pigs and those that want it get some delicious fruits and veggies. The cows, we have 600 acres here at Animal Place, and so we're so fortunate in that most of the animals can just do free graze.
Mm.
We have to supplement it with grass hay. And you know, they get their treats too, some grain, but very little because it's fattening. But our animals are all on, you know, just dozens and dozens and dozens of acres. And so they're able to go for free graze and have a very natural diet for their species.
Yeah, that's so lovely. And you know what? The answer, obviously, is to go vegan. It's the answer to everything. And as I mentioned before, when I visited these cattle ranchers, I was on this feedlot seeing hundreds of cows fenced in sitting on dirt. And it was just this incredibly unnatural thing. And unfortunately, you may have heard this, that those that are interested in, quote, humane slaughter because they're concerned about animal welfare, they don't realize that it's worse on the environment. To graze animals, and I mean the ideal thing is to just stop eating them, and we can have a nice population of a variety of animals living naturally and in balance with the environment.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, having free-range or grass-fed beef, as they say, that's not sustainable. It's marketed as sustainable, but it's maybe sustainable for, you know, the 1% of the population that could afford it. It's not going to feed the world as this mass production of animals are.
And then you've heard this so many times where people say, but we need these animals. We need them for manure for our crops. And, okay, there's veganics now, so we know that we don't need animal manure. But even if you wanted to use animal manure, you could have animals. Why do you have to kill them?
Exactly. And actually, you're right. We had a huge veganic farm here of 3 acres, and we grew all sorts of produce. And we did it as a model just to see, okay, we won't use our manure. Now, ours is kind of, you know, cruelty-free manure, but we won't do it. We'll just do it, see if we can do it veganically. And it was couldn't have been more successful. We had CSA boxes we sold that whole season. So, yes, we do not need animal manure to be fertilizing our crops, and it is doing just, if you haven't already, I don't know if you've had the opportunity to see that excellent film that came out, Cowspiracy.
I haven't seen it yet. I've talked to the directors.
God.
Yeah.
That's a game changer. I'm hoping that's a real game changer. It really does an excellent job of making the case for the impact that animal ag is having on our environment. And where the heck is the environmental community on
this? Oh, please. They've never been there. It's all about hypocrisy.
They've never been there.
Yeah. They've never been there.
I know.
Oh. All right. Let's. 25 years have gone by, and I don't know how long you've been vegan.
Oh, golly. More than that. So 30-some-odd years.
So I don't know how you are in the kitchen, but what are some of the things you're eating now that you like to eat, and has it changed over the last quarter century?
You know, I am not nuts about the faux meats. I'll try them once in a while, but I think all of us who work at Animal Place, we would consider ourselves foodies, so we do potlucks all the time. And for me, I can't get happier than a big plate of pasta smothered in garlicky olive oil with veggies on top. I mean, that I'm a happy camper with that. And Mexican food, I could eat all day long.
Yep.
I kind of go for the carbs, the fattening stuff. Maybe that's because we're working
here. Yeah, you're probably working it off quite a bit. Yeah, I love food. And don't we, I don't know if anybody's done a survey, but I think the percentage of vegans are more, there's probably a higher percentage of foodies in vegans than there are foodies in the general population.
You know, you might be right. I hadn't thought about that, but you very well may be right.
I haven't thought about it until this moment, but now I'm thinking that would be a fun survey to do because
that would.
I mean, we really do love food, and that's one of the ironies, because people that think they can't go vegan think they're going to miss things, they think they're going to be deprived, and then, you know, they should just look at this mob of crazy happy people eating vegan food. We love our food.
Well, you could. I absolutely agree with you, and I think that's one of the responsibilities those of us who are vegan have, is to cook for our friends and our colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bring one of your delicious vegan cakes or vegan chocolate tofu pie, or make them. Oh, I have a great recipe for cashew cheese lasagna that I have served to so many omnivores, and they love it. And so it's really, I think, incumbent upon us to do some cooking for our omnivore friends, and that speaks for itself. They know that you can eat, you know, vegan and tasty.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm thinking when people get frustrated about the world today and all the violence that's going on and feeling frustrated and all they want to do is post things on Facebook and share articles about how horrible things are, I think they should make a vegan meal and invite all their friends.
I love it.
That's something to do that will take the violence out of their life. Whoa. Okay.
That's a great idea.
Kim, you're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you. My pleasure. Great pleasure.
Everybody should visit animalplace.org.
Yes, please do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Just a couple minutes left. I wanted to remind you again about tomorrow's free webinar on water purity. You can sign up at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. It's over on the right-hand side. Please join me tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Free, free, free water webinar, and you can ask questions. It'll be a lot of fun. Also, we're going through our summer fundraising drive here at Responsible Eating and Living, and if you like what we do, please support us because we could use your help. Again, you can visit the website and hit the donate bar. And that's all. So I recommend everybody making vegan meals and inviting your friends over and enjoying those foods and letting people know that plant foods taste great. And that's how we can become a kinder, gentle world faster. All right, that's your assignment. So have a delicious week. Bye-bye.